My special guest in profile is Professor Ian Fraser, who is chairing the Improving Human Life theme of the Global Cafe. Good evening, Professor.
Good evening, Walter.
It's great to have you on the program on Nights, and you will be part of this Global Cafe, which we've already talked about here on this program, next Wednesday on the 12th and Thursday the 13th of November. And what kind of conversation will this lead to, do you think, with the Global Cafe?
Well, look, the aim, obviously, is to get people together who have an opinion about how things should move forward from where we are now, and particularly in the area of global health, which actually is more to do with food and water as well as medical research and how we apply health. It's basically to try and come up with some bright ideas, solutions for the problems we're going to face over the next 100 years.
Mm. And you're one of five high-profile identities who've been appointed to steer these global conversations between some of the world's most influential thinkers. And amongst those thinkers, any that you particularly admire?
Well, look, there's a lot of people who are going to be there. I mean, not necessarily from the medical area. Lishwin Seng is going to lead off the event, talking about his vision for how the world might work together on these problems. And I think that's the sort of theme that we're going to try and set, is working together to solve problems.
Mm. Well, you're going to be talking about the program and the fascinating innovation and insights into the future attendees can expect. And as you say, from a medical perspective, of course, because you're well known for your cervical cancer vaccine pioneering.
Well, obviously, we want to think about control of infectious diseases as part of the problem, because if we look at the global scene, and particularly right at the moment with an epidemic of Ebola going on, and just having worked our way through several epidemics over the last 20 to 30 years of infections that we'd never even really heard of before, we realize that this is going to be our challenge in the future. New pathogens will emerge. We will have to be ready to deal with them. That means we've got to keep our knowledge base high in understanding how pathogens work and how we work, and then we've got to be ready to get something done about it when the new ones emerge.
Yes, we're talking about Ebola. Obviously, it's on the minds of a lot of people at the moment. It's front and centre. Do you think we're prepared enough in the Sunshine State for such a crisis?
Look, I think we're very fortunate with Ebola that although it's a very nasty, a lethal infection if you have the misfortune to get it, we also know pretty much that it's not all that infectious. And really, it's a matter of very close personal contact that's necessary to passing of fluids from one person to another, pretty much, in order to get the infection. So we know how to control that sort of infection. We've been practicing good control over that sort of infection for other infections for a long time. And I think that it would be very unlikely that there would be spread of Ebola, even if a person arrived in the Sunshine State with Ebola, because of the nature of the way it's spread. So no, I'm not concerned about that. I am concerned about what's going on in Africa, and obviously we need to do things there to try and help the people there to control the spread of the infection in overcrowded and under-sanitized cities. But here in Australia, we're really pretty well immune.
Mm. Would you like to see more involvement of Australians in Africa?
Look, I think it's our responsibility as a developed nation to make sure we do everything we can in Africa to try and help control the infection there. Exactly what that should be is something that's best left to the experts in public health, and that might well involve sending people from here. It might equally well involve giving better education programs that can be given out there to stop the spread locally.
Mm. And epidemic, pandemic, call it what we will, but what do you think could be the next big thing for the world to deal with?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball, because then I'd know what to do to prevent it. But I think that we are going to be challenged repeatedly by influenza virus. It has had pandemics throughout human history, and it will have them again. We're much better prepared than we once were to deal with that, but we still would have to be ready to mount a vaccine campaign and do whatever was necessary in the public health arena. I mean, the big challenge we face in the 21st century for really infectious diseases is, first of all, to make sure that people use the immunizations we've got. You know, measles is a very, very infectious disease, and so long as we're all immunized, we're pretty safe. But if we don't get immunized, we've got a problem. And then secondly, to be ready to step in with public health measures for the really infectious diseases if we don't have a vaccine ready, and flu would be a good example, where we might have to seriously curtail travel in order to stop it spreading if there were a particularly nasty flu came along.
You're obviously a big fan of immunisation as a preventative measure.
Immunisation is the single most important public health measure we've introduced after clean food and water. It has been the thing which has made the biggest difference to the health on this planet and will continue to be, and we really have to ensure we make use of the immunisation we've got.
Mm. And how important do you think this Brisbane Global Cafe is in being a first for a G20 host city?
Look, I think it's a great idea to bring together people and in the public eye. I mean, the media will be there, world leaders will be there, and it's a great opportunity to sell, first of all, what we do in Brisbane and Queensland and say, look, we're really pretty good at all of these things, and secondly, to sell ideas to the rest of the world when they've got their attention focused on Brisbane. We can't do enough in the way of education to make sure that people get the benefit of what we already know and to make sure they realise about what we're going to have to cope with in the future.
Mm. And this cafe, do you think it's going to explore important issues around improving human life and developing cities and all of that, all the important issues that we need to talk about?
Well, I hope that we'll get through as many of them as we can. I mean, for example, there's a very important section, in my opinion, on mental health. We are very much challenged by the problem of mental health. It's one of the sort of things that we try to sweep under the carpet because we don't like dealing with it. But nevertheless, it's a very major issue. More days have lost to work through mental health issues than any other particular health problem. And we don't yet have a good strategy for dealing with it, even in the developed world, let alone in the developing world, where it's also equally a problem.
Exactly. It is something that I deal with quite a lot on the Nights program, is discussing mental health as an issue and how we can better equip ourselves to deal with the pressures of today's society. And I guess that's part of it, isn't it, Professor?
Yeah, well, there's two sides to it, isn't there? One is obviously that we have to do what we can to minimise the actual instance of mental health. The other side of things is we have to destigmatise it to the extent that we can. And that comes through education. You know, we have moved a long way from the day where we locked people up in asylums when they were seriously mentally disturbed and tried to forget about them completely or treat them as witches. And, you know, we've come a long way from there, but we still have a lot of anxiety in the community about how to deal with people who don't behave quite the same way as we do, and yet who are quite capable of living quite, to them, normal lives in society. So it's difficult, and nobody's ever said that these problems are easy solved, but one of the first parts of solution is to recognise the problem, and the second part then is to educate people so that they also understand what it's about.
Exactly. Professor Ian Fraser, my special guest in Profile tonight, who is chairing the Improving Human Life theme of the Global Cafe, which is taking place in Brisbane next week as part of the lead-up to the 2014 G20 that Brisbane is hosting, and it's on at Brisbane City Hall. We can't go past the fact that you're from Glasgow, Scotland, so you must have enjoyed the Commonwealth Games.
Yes, well, obviously I would have liked to have been there to watch them, but it was good to see how well the Scots actually managed to do in some of the events, which was quite unexpected.
Yeah. What did you think of their idea of separatism just recently?
One of the nice things about being a Scot abroad is that you don't need to worry too much about the local politics, but I would have to say that I couldn't really see the advantage for the Scots of being independent from England. They have their own laws, they have their own education system, their own health system, their own currency pretty much already, and to add in independence didn't really seem to add a great deal to that mix.
Yeah, well, obviously a lot of people felt the same way, otherwise the vote would have gone completely differently. And here you are in your 60s now. What do you think's been the most important life lesson you've learned?
Learn from other people. I have been very fortunate to have had good mentors and good people that I would aspire to be like through my life, because they've made it very much easier for me to know which way to go in life.
Exactly. And being a Glasgow lad, was it a hard transition becoming an Aussie?
No, not at all. Look, I mean, we made a decision as a family that Australia would be our adopted home. The research facilities here drew me here, and I came here because Melbourne at that time was the best place to do the sort of research I wanted to do. We've stayed here because the facilities are still great. We have our wonderful new Translational Research Institute building up at the PA Hospital, which is just ideal for doing the sort of research that I want to do to help try and solve the problems with infectious diseases.
Were you drawn to science at an early age?
I was always keen on understanding how the world worked, and I guess that's what makes a scientist. I used to take things to bits to see how they work, but all kids are like that. They really want to explore and see what goes on. And somehow we steam the interest in science out of them. I'm not quite sure how that happens, but I think it might be something to do with the fact that we put difficult exams at the end of it rather than making it all practical and exciting.
Yeah. Was part of that interest in science because of your parents being medical scientists?
Yeah, there was a lot of that about it. I mean, obviously, if you have an environment where people are talking about science at home, then it certainly encourages you. And my parents used to give me chemistry sets and things like that. I mean, you're not allowed to do that sort of thing anymore. You set the plate on fire or blow it up. In those days, the chemistry sets had real ingredients. You could do real experiments.
I can tell you right now, Professor Ian Fraser, that there is a home in Holland Park in Brisbane that still has a mark on the roof of it after a chemistry set explosion went horribly wrong many years ago when I was a child. So you obviously dabbled in that too.
Indeed. Look, I mean, that was part of the fun. It's not an experiment if you know what the answer is going to be.
That is so true, isn't it? Absolutely. And you and your lovely wife have been together for some time, since the 70s. Is that unusual in your line of work, that the longevity of the relationship?
Well, I hope not. I mean, look, the one bit of good advice that I was given when I was a medical student was, don't marry another medical student. You'll never see them. They'll be on a different shift from you. So I chose to marry a teacher, which has been a blessing in my life, I think.
A very smart move. And when it came to discovering that cervical cancer vaccine, because I remember being a reporter covering this when it happened years ago, and you pioneered this, what was the elation, the feeling, when you discovered that this is something that could change the way we think about the world?
Well, look, we were obviously, Jan Zhu and I, delighted when we came up with the technology which led to the vaccine, but it didn't really get exciting until we saw the results of the clinical trials, because we knew that if we'd got a technology which might lead to a vaccine, but to actually see it working in the real world is very exciting. And to give the first shot of vaccine to the first person that was immunized in Australia once the vaccine was licensed here, and well, that was really something which showed that all that research work actually does lead to practical outcomes. And that was a great lesson to be able to tell other people.
Mm. Are you working on other breakthroughs?
Well, we always like to think we are. At the moment, we're working on a vaccine for herpes. It's in early stages of clinical trial at the moment. I mean, it's about 10 years behind where we were when we launched the papillomavirus vaccine here, so there's quite a bit to go yet. But the results so far have been very exciting, and we're very keen to carry on with that. Yeah. We're also interested very much in skin cancer at the moment, and in some of the things that might be done to prevent sun-damaged skin turning into skin cancer, because we shouldn't go out in the sun, but a lot of people have, and they've got the damage, and now we want to stop that going on to becoming cancerous.
Mm. Do you get a lot of people coming up to you when they see you in public, Professor Ian Fraser, and thanking you for what you've done?
Well, it still happens from time to time. It's very nice when it does, but I think now it's a case of them coming up and looking at my face and saying, gee, I know that face from somewhere. Is he the guy that escaped from the jail last week? Or is it, you know, where have I seen him before?
Has it changed your life in any way, apart from that?
Well, look, there was certainly a period when I had to acquire a public persona and keep my private life and public life separate, which is something which I found quite difficult to do. But I think things are settling back down to a little more like normal now, and I can get on with my research work.
And has it led to a more comfortable life, so you're not sort of living from one paycheck to the next?
Well, that's certainly true. On the other hand, I seem to have an ever-growing pile of things on my plate that I'm expected to do. So I've swapped a life of penury for a life of hard work, I think.
Yes, and you know, you talk about wanting to be low-key, but it's hard when you're named Australian of the Year in 2006, isn't it?
Yes, that was certainly a life-changing event for me and for my family. But it was a great honour when I was given that title, and it was a great opportunity to do things during the year I was Australian of the Year. What I didn't realise was that it was actually a job for life as well.
Mm. Yeah, well, it started off as Queenslander of the Year.
Indeed, yeah. Even that was exciting.
So, yes. You know, and then when it rolled into Australian of the Year, it just took it to a whole other level, didn't it?
Well, I just looked on it the other way around. It was the Queenslander of the Year was much the more important title.
So you call Queensland home now after all these years?
Yeah, well, look, we've lived here for a long time now. We came here in 1986, so it's getting on to nearly 30 years now.
Oh, we can call you a local then.
I don't think I ever get called a local.
Professor, it's been great having a chat with you. Thank you very much. And just tell us, you know, at the end of it all, how would you like to be remembered? What would be your legacy, Professor Ian Fraser?
The students that I've mentored during my career, the ones that are going on to do even better things than I've done.
Wow, that's great. Look, it's been an absolute honour talking to you tonight. Thank you for joining us on Nights.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.